from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Penny Nelson. The Department of Homeland Security announced Thursday that, effective immediately, the U.S. will require asylum seekers who enter the U.S. from Mexico to return there while their claims for asylum are decided. The Mexican government acknowledged this agreement in a press release but gave few details. The California Report's Polly Stryker has more.
In announcing the policy, the Trump administration claimed an illegal immigration crisis, saying many people skip their court dates if they reside in the U.S. while applying for asylum. Rafael Fernandez de Castro directs the Center of U.S.-Mexican Studies at the University of California, San Diego. He mentioned Mexico's foreign minister's recent comments.
He was talking about new billions of dollars that are going to be put into Central America development and also in southern Mexico, which to me sounds like the carrot of an agreement with the U.S.
If that's the carrot, he said, the U.S. announcement Thursday was the stick, one that will place a large burden on Mexico's northern border. David Shirk directs the Justice in Mexico project at the University of San Diego. He says this agreement shows the new Mexican government is desperate to avoid confrontation with President Donald Trump, and that these migrants will now be made to wait in violent border cities.
We're basically turning them into sitting ducks for organized crime.
The Department of Homeland Security didn't respond to a request for information about how asylum seekers waiting in Mexico would appear in immigration court in the U.S. For the California Report, I'm Polly Stryker.
Meanwhile, migrants waiting down there may be breathing bad air. Reporter Ian James investigated pollution along border towns of Mexicali and Calexico for the Desert Sun in a series called Poisoned Cities, Deadly Border. I asked him about the source of the air pollution and particulate matter that harms people's health.
Well, it's partly the desert environment. You know, you do have dust blowing from the desert and the farmlands that surround these cities. And then you also have sources like lots of vehicle exhaust and emissions from factories, as well as burning of trash and burning of fields.
So these are factories that are making goods for us to consume up here, but in the meantime are desperately polluting the air in these two towns.
Clearly we saw some of these factories are spewing smoke, and people in the neighborhoods around them are concerned about their health, and they're asking why government regulators in Mexicali aren't doing more about it.
And why aren't they?
Well, for one thing, they are short-staffed. Not a lot of funding is put toward environmental enforcement there. What we found when we looked at the numbers on the fines and inspections that was provided to us by Baja California's state environmental regulator is that a lot of the fines are small, and for the most part, they are relatively small businesses and not the big factories that are getting fined.
In your reporting, you cover two sisters, both dramatically impacted by the air pollution. Can you give us a glimpse at their story?
Yes, we talked with Michelle Dugan Delgado, and she grew up along the border, she and her sister, Marie, and they both had asthma as they were growing up. And when Marie was 16 and in high school, she had an asthma attack and died. And since that time, Michelle has spent time in the community talking about the problems of air pollution and trying to raise awareness about it.
So what are the statistics around the deaths and maybe premature deaths in the area?
Well, Imperial County has one of the highest rates in California for children being taken to emergency rooms for asthma. And in Mexicali, we analyzed health data and found that deaths from respiratory illnesses are much higher than the Mexican national average and have also been on the rise since 2010.
Wow. What's the response to your coverage on the issue, Ben?
Well, we did hear from the California Air Resources Board, and at their latest meeting, the California Air Resources Board decided to hire a new executive level official to oversee the pollution issues on the border.
Ian James is a reporter on the Poisoned Cities series in the Desert Sun. Meanwhile, on the healthcare front, Kaiser Permanente has settled a class action lawsuit in which it was accused of dumping mental health patients off coverage. KQED's April Demboski explains that Kaiser allegedly pushed patients out of hospitals and into government-funded mental health treatment instead.
In 2014, Douglas Kerr got a phone call from Kaiser. His 21-year-old son had been in the hospital for a month, getting treatment for schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. Kerr says the Kaiser rep told him it was time to cancel his son's health coverage. They said he needed to get treatment at a locked residential facility run by LA County. This meant his son's care was now being paid by taxpayers instead of Kaiser. Kerr later filed a lawsuit accusing Kaiser of violating state mental health laws. Kaiser admits no wrongdoing. In a statement, it says it never forced anyone to cancel their coverage. Under the settlement, Kaiser has to pay $1.2 million in attorney's fees and inform affected patients that they can re-enroll in Kaiser health plans. For the California Report, I'm April Dymbosky.
And on another front, tobacco giant Altria is spending $13 billion to buy a significant stake in San Francisco-based vaping company Juul. Both companies pitched the deal as a way to move adult smokers to safer products. But Dr. John Ma with the American Heart Association's Bay Area Division says it's a troubling development.
For over 5 years, the electronic cigarette advocates and proponents have touted how they have been anti-big tobacco. But to see Big Tobacco and Juul join in a partnership now creates a public health nightmare.
The deal gives the maker of Marlboro cigarettes a 35% economic interest in Juul, which has captured three-quarters of the U.S. e-cigarette market. Tijuana residents remain divided about the migrant exodus, many, not all of whom, must now stay in Mexico during asylum proceedings. KPBS's Jean Guerrero reports.
Paloma Zuniga is a right-wing Mexican-American media personality who goes by Paloma for Trump on her Facebook page, which has more than 47,000 followers. She's been selling Make Tijuana Great Again baseball caps and has become the face of the Mexican resistance to the Central American migrants in Tijuana.
We should take care of our Mexicans before we take care of other people.
Zuniga was part of a confrontation with the caravan where rocks were thrown a few weeks ago. She now says the groups should have approached each other differently.
We really weren't familiar with these people. Now we're getting a little bit more familiar with them, and we're realizing that maybe not all of them are criminals.
Meanwhile, other residents of Tijuana, like Jorge Santos, have been bringing donations for the migrants all along. He says people who oppose them don't know the love of God.
If Jesus were here, alive, he'd do this. He'd give food to the hungry, drink to the thirsty, clothes to those without clothes.
There are still about 3,000 migrants at an official shelter in eastern Tijuana, many of whom are waiting to apply for asylum. For the California Report, I'm Jean Guerrero in Tijuana.
So as many of those migrants keep streaming into the area, two California congressional representatives went to the San Diego border this week to gauge the situation. KQED's Michelle Wiley has more.
Around 12 hours. That's how long Los Angeles Representatives Nanette Diaz-Berrigan and Jimmy Gomez spent at the Otay Mesa Port of Entry, monitoring how Border Patrol officers were treating people seeking asylum. And according to Berrigan, who sits on the Homeland Security Committee, what she's been told in Congress by Customs and Border Protection did not match what she saw.
When they've been questioned before about why migrants don't go to the point of entries because there's reports they're being turned away, they reject those accounts. But I saw that firsthand when I went down.
She says that during her time at Otay Mesa, she saw families with young kids who were left out in the cold for hours.
12 hours out in the cold, basically ignoring them. And that's a concern, especially in light of what we're hearing with the kids in CBP custody who are getting sick, who are dying, and whether they're getting adequate attention, medical care.
Berrigan says it's clear from her experiences that operations at the border need more oversight, something she'll be calling for in the new year. Customs and Border Protection did not immediately respond to a request for comment. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Wiley.
Shifting gears now, Christmas has come early for some Tahoe vacationers and websites like Airbnb where they booked their stays. The California Report's Lily Jamali brings us the details.
Officials in South Lake Tahoe have decided to hold off on enforcing new restrictions on vacation home rentals over the holidays. Voters narrowly passed Measure T last month. It bans most short-term rentals, the kind found on Airbnb and VRBO, in residential parts of town, but not until 2021. Another part of the measure was set to take effect yesterday, capping how many people can stay in a rental. City Manager Frank Rush says enforcing it would have disrupted plans for many vacationers.
The city certainly recognizes that people made reservations for lodging and travel many months ago, and we certainly need to be reasonable, enable folks to come and enjoy their visit to South Lake Tahoe.
The city's decision to wait comes after a group of local property owners filed a lawsuit Wednesday seeking an emergency halt to the measure. The suit says capping occupancy violates the rights of property owners. For the California Report, I'm Lily Jamali.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, featuring Listening to Mothers in California, a new survey that reveals what is and isn't working with maternity care in the Golden State, on the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And finally, on this Friday before Christmas, tens of thousands of refugees from the Camp Fire will be spending Christmas with friends and family next week, many of them in Chico. That neighboring city's become a safe haven, not just for people burned out of their homes, but for religious congregations too, as KQED's Rachel Miro reports.
This is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it.
In the last month, First Assembly of God Paradise and its sister church in Chico have blended together. Leaders of both churches run the services, including youth pastor Kyle Smith of Paradise, who's living currently with his family in a 26-foot trailer outside his brother-in-law's house in Chico.
We just didn't know where our help was going to come from. But when I opened up my eyes the next day, all the phone calls we received, the funds that came through, the blessings that came in, I saw rivers in a desert place.
He's referencing the book of Isaiah, scrolling on his phone because his Bible burned in the campfire. The pews in Chico are packed now every Sunday, but Smith says they're all too aware of who's not there or who's about to leave for good.
The first couple weeks, we had more, but people have since had to move and relocate out of state in the Bay Area, different places, just to have somewhere safe to be and stay.
More than $10,000 in gift cards and donations from other churches have rolled in. Donations the Combo Congregation intends to share widely. Will First Assembly Paradise rebuild? That's the hope, Smith says, 2 or 3 years from now.
We don't have plans. We don't have a blueprint. One of these days. We don't know when, but it's coming.
Go tell it on the mountain.
There's no time limit to the welcome coming from Second Baptist Church, Chico. Pastor Joseph Kiwovele is good friends with Sam Walker, who leads two burned-out Paradise congregations.
I told Pastor Sam, this building is an open building. As long as there is a need of it, it will be open.
Pastor Kiwovele shares a thought common among Chico's faithful. They have an opportunity this holiday season to practice the spiritual values they believe in most dearly in the most practical way possible, by taking in congregations made homeless by the campfire. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Miro in Chico.
And that, my friends, is the California Report for Friday, December 21st, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Danny Bringer and Katie McMurrin, with additional engineering from Seal Muller, Rob Spate, and Jim Bennett. The team getting the show on the air each day includes Nina Thorson, Sonia Hudson, Peter Arcuni, Yuri Nagano, and Michelle Wiley. Pauly Stryker's our producer. I'm Penny Nelson. Have a great weekend.